Maine's healthcare workers and the monumental strain of the pandemic. Again today, Maine has set another record for new cases of COVID-19, shattering the old record set yesterday. The people caring for the sickest COVID patients have been doing so for 9 months now. The American hospital has been compared to a war zone, with employees experiencing similar trauma day after day. Surveys of healthcare workers show that an overwhelming number are experiencing stress, anxiety, frustration, exhaustion, and burnout. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with healthcare workers about how they are coping with this surge. We'll also find out about help available for them and what the rest of us can do. If you work in healthcare, we hope you'll call or email and share your story. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm your host, Jennifer Rooks. If anyone is feeling the strain of this pandemic, it is the frontline caregivers, especially with the record number of COVID-19 patients now in Maine hospitals. Today, we'll find out how healthcare workers in Maine are faring and what is being done to help them cope during this crisis. My guest, Angela Felicia, who's manager of Healthy Life Resources and at Northern Light Health, and Dr. Christine Hine, Chief Wellness Officer for Maine Medical Center. We invite your comments and questions, especially if you are a healthcare worker. We'd love to hear your story. We'd love for you to share that with the rest of us. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Christine and Angela, thank you both so much for being here. And Dr. Hine, I'm going to start with you. I think we know that healthcare workers have been strained since March. Now we're seeing a surge in hospitalizations. Can you talk about the most direct challenge that frontline caregivers are facing? What it's like to basically care for patients with COVID-19?
Yes, thank you very much, Jennifer, for having me on the phone today. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this subject. And, you know, I wanted to start out and say that clearly everybody in our communities are feeling this level of distress and the strain and fatigue that COVID has placed on us. And healthcare workers are no different than anybody else. And when this challenge presented itself in March this year in Maine, the response has been pretty remarkable, and the experience is one that I'm sure we'll never forget. We had some lead-in time, thankfully, here in the state to prepare ourselves for what other areas of the country and other areas of the world were experiencing prior to us, and that lead-in time was really important to get our procedures and our operational plan in place in terms of just how we were going to manage this on the ground. And then, of course, I can go into detail if you want to know or hear more about that, but I think that was a really important piece of our preparation.
Yeah, I wanted to hear, Christine, you know, I'm trying to imagine. I obviously haven't been in a hospital in the last 9 months and thankfully have not had COVID. What it's like to have to work day in, day out with that PPP on, head to toe, and having to PPE. Did I say PPE? Not the loan.
That's kind of how it feels. Yeah.
The PPE on head to toe. The people being isolated in their rooms, dealing with people on ventilators. I mean, I'm just imagining. I was thinking maybe you could walk me through what a shift is like for someone who's working on an ICU.
Yeah, So my experience is in the emergency department, and we have a critical care area in the emergency department. But basically, when this started, we had to create an emergency department within our existing space. So it was kind of a ED within an ED. That it was an isolation unit so that patients who we were concerned could potentially have COVID could be placed in the isolation unit for their own safety as well as safety of other patients in the ED for non-COVID related concerns and for the safety of our staff. So that was a very huge shift initially to create kind of a hospital within a hospital, if you will. And that happened in other areas as well, not just in the emergency department, but on the inpatient floors and in the intensive care units around the state. And as you can imagine, when you're trying to double the number of spaces that you need to staff with the same number of staff, it creates a pretty significant strain on resources. So, you know, there's that kind of procedural and logistic challenge. And then there's the huge emotional challenge of what this further isolation does to our patients and to us as health caregivers. You know, most people go into medicine because they want to connect with people and they want to help others. And to suddenly have this additional barrier between yourself and patients who you're used to sitting at the bedside with, touching them, holding hands in moments of distress, that was completely off the table. You know, obviously nobody's shaking hands these days. Even the way you introduce yourself to someone and establish a relationship is completely turned upside down in the midst of this. And then there's just the kind of physical impact of the PPE. It is noisy. when you have the air flowing around your head, you can't hear. You have to ask people to repeat themselves. It really creates kind of a sense of distance. And then for our pediatric patients, I just really worried about what the impact of that has been on patients who come through you know, who touched the healthcare system during this, who are young and perhaps don't understand why people are dressed up in these suits that make them look like they're from outer space, and to try and alleviate any anxiety that might be precipitated by that. So it's a whole lot of stuff that goes into just walking into a room to care for patients who may have COVID.
Angela, I want to turn to you. What are you seeing in terms of the emotional toll on healthcare workers right now?
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for hosting this really important topic. Yeah, so we at Northern Light Health, and I'm with Acadia specifically, we have really seen across our healthcare system, which reaches so many parts of our state, that certainly the folks that are patient-facing are nurses, physicians, respiratory therapists, et cetera, are really struggling to sort of sustain this prolonged crisis in terms of just their own psychological strength, right? This is all very wearing on folks. You know, I appreciate that Christine was really able to highlight how physically wearing it can be on folks, but this is also really mentally, emotionally, psychologically draining. And we really are seeing that across the healthcare system.
Angela, I read that for some healthcare workers, it is the same kind of trauma as being in a war zone, seeing so many people suffering for 9 months on end and having this many patients die. Is that accurate?
Yeah. You know, I think certainly that is a really good analogy. There's so much that's stressful about this event, from having to wear the PPE, to the asymptomatic nature of folks potentially being contagious and not even knowing they have the illness, to the long shifts. And then if there is any kind of exposure, you're also then in a position where you're reducing staff. So you're kind of constantly on edge. And that being on edge all the time is really pretty exhausting. Our brains and bodies weren't really designed to sustain that level of crisis response and that stress response over these 9+ months. You know, we do certainly have the ability across our healthcare system with my colleagues across the system to really do crisis work. But typically the crisis is really time limited. So the sustained crisis is really making this even more challenging for folks. So I don't think that analogy is that far off.
Hmm. Yeah, if I wanted to kind of respond to something Angela was saying, the idea and concept of the stress response is really important to consider in a pandemic. And if you think about kind of the baseline axis being time and then your y-axis is number of cases, as your number of cases increase and you have an extended period of time, you move from that kind of initial phase of being concerned about the basics like safety, physical safety, food, shelter, safety for your family, safety for your patients, into an intense period of uncertainty, not knowing what's going to happen at the peak of it. And then on the downside, the downslope of that is really the psychological impact. And that is, I think, one of the things that healthcare organizations have been trying to do is to move the consideration for the psychological and mental health impact forward in that curve and not wait until, you know, the pandemic is starting to, you know, recede, if you will, but to really consider the importance of addressing it currently.
Calling in now is Dr. Claudia Geyer, who is Chief of Hospital Medicine for Central Maine Healthcare. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Geyer.
Thank you very much for having me.
What are you seeing at your hospital right now in terms of the influx of COVID patients?
We are seeing more COVID patients than we have since the beginning of the pandemic. I think that's a common theme. And currently, unfortunately, a lot of our patients are have been part of a Thanksgiving holiday gathering with their families. So like many others, we're seeing multiple members of the same gathering or family who are affected by the virus.
For you and your colleagues, how stressful has it been, especially during this current surge?
Well, you know, one thing about the healthcare piece to this is that there was never a downtime. You know, the hospital's always open 24/7, weekends, et cetera. So we have had the gift of our connection to each other and being inspired by each other. So while it is always a high intensity field, there's no question that the intensity is on overdrive, and then add together to the intensity the risk. It's significant, but I and my partners have spent a great deal of time being inspired by the people around us, and having that connection to each other has been incredibly fortifying. So I have seen no, while I see the stress, there's no reduction in dedication and people doing what is their calling and exercising their compassion.
Can you give us an example of something that was particularly difficult in having to care for a patient with COVID-19 or something particularly inspiring or both?
Sure. You know, I think, again, we've heard these stories across the country and it is particularly challenging when you have multiple family members because we are all members of families. So it is very easy for our staff who are programmed this way anyway to empathize. So we recently had two members of the same family where one passed and then the other passed shortly thereafter. In a way, it was beautiful. The couple who had been together for many, many years ended up together in the end. In a way, in another way, it was terribly tragic because all you can think about is this family with multiple losses essentially at the same time right before the holidays. So those are the things that people take home with them and that, they really need support. And I think probably the most important means of that support is acknowledgement, like you're doing with this show, which is wonderful, and that the healthcare workers feel, valued by that acknowledgement.
Dr. Geyer, before we let you go, I want to ask, what do you feel the general public may not realize about healthcare workers during this pandemic?
I think that, I can't get off this call without saying that today is a new day. You know, I got the vaccine yesterday, so there is this light that has come in that we were in desperate need of. So we really do, we see hope down the road. And the one message that I would have is hearing that the numbers are higher than they have ever been in our state and knowing that we have a whole grouping of, you know, folks who had gathered for the last holiday with another holiday in front of us. I hope that for the sake of the healthcare workers and everyone in the whole statewide community, people can just be a little bit stronger about taking the necessary precautions to get through this, where we do see a light at the end of the tunnel right now with the vaccines coming in.
Dr. Geyer, thank you so much for calling in, and I'm thrilled to hear you were able to get the vaccine. Thank you for calling in. And Dr. Claudia Geyer is Chief of Hospital Medicine for Central Maine Healthcare. Dr. Hine, did I hear you want to jump in right there?
Well, I want to say hi to Claudia. I haven't
seen her. Oh, sorry.
And thank her for everything that she's doing. And I couldn't agree more. The vaccine distribution this week has definitely created a bit of a levity that wasn't there in the prior months. So it's definite hope on the horizon.
Angela, let me ask you this. At the beginning of the pandemic, we saw people doing a lot of things for healthcare workers. I remember on Maine Calling talking about somebody who had tied flowers to light posts going into Maine Medical Center's emergency room. We heard about people delivering food to healthcare workers and things like that. At this point, here we are 9 months into this during a surge, and yes, so exciting about the vaccine, some people being vaccinated, others knowing it's coming. What would you say to members of the general public? What can those people who care about healthcare workers, who are thinking about healthcare workers, do to support them?
That's a fabulous question, actually. And one of the best things that the community can do to support healthcare workers, really, frankly, across the country, is to follow the recommendations of the healthcare professionals. Wear a mask, physically distant, don't gather in large groups, hand washing, et cetera. That, in and of itself, actually, will be the thing that can be the most impactful for our healthcare professionals. It is very exhausting, as we've just talked about, to sort of see people being so sick. Dr. Geyer shared that very sad story about two members of the same family passing away from COVID very close together. And to really help reduce those real crises and real traumas, we can all do our part by really following those CDC guidelines. To really reduce the numbers, or at least, you know, help mitigate things until we can have that vaccine distributed to everybody.
All right. And we do have a Facebook post to that effect. John writes, I have come to realize that a big reason I wear a mask whenever I'm around others is to help doctors, nurses, and other frontline folks. Mm-hmm. It's the tiny thing I can do. We do need to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We are talking about the impact of the pandemic 9 months in and during a surge on frontline healthcare workers. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Send a tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or send an email talk@mainepublic.org.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling. With help from Downeast School of Massage, committed to making a career in massage therapy obtainable. Next session this January, downeastschoolofmassage.net. And with help from Camden National Wealth Management, providing investment management, planning, and trust advisory services to help clients and their families achieve their goals.
Maybe a star that shone before will shine once more.
This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. I hope you can join us for an hour of Songs of the Season from Holly Cole, Joan Baez, Bruce Coburn, Loudon Wainwright III, The Roaches, Kathy Mattea, and more, all recorded live on the Mountain Stage.
And that's coming up Saturday evening at 6 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public's new All Books Considered book club connects readers across Maine. Our virtual book discussions are hosted by members of the Maine Calling team and feature an opportunity to hear directly from the author. We invite you to join us. For complete details on the book club, including our inaugural reading selection and how to sign up, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the show, healthcare workers, their burnout. How bad is it? What can be done to help? Joining me, Christine Hine, who is Chief Wellness Officer for Maine Medical Center and an emergency medicine physician, and Angela Felicia, Manager of Healthy Life Resources at Northern Light Health. She's a licensed social worker. Share your comments or questions via email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us on the line now is Dr. Michael Schmitz, an emergency department physician at Southern Maine Healthcare. Dr. Schmitz, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
So how busy is it in the ER right now with the escalating COVID cases?
So we're certainly seeing an increase in inpatient volume and an increasing number of patients who are dealing with and requiring admission because of illness due to COVID. So we're pretty busy, and we're expecting that it's going to get busier.
And let me ask you this. When someone comes into the ER suspecting they have COVID, how does that work? What do you do right away? Because other people are at the ER for other reasons.
Oh, sure. So we rely on two things, depending on how the patient presents to the emergency department. You know, many of these patients who are quite ill are coming in by EMS. And we're relying on, and we're grateful to the EMS notifications that we receive that someone might have COVID. Where all these patients are being masked, we're wearing masks. And in addition, when someone presents through the walk-in entrance, they're being screened and asking questions about COVID symptoms. And we're looking for compliance with wearing a mask in order to reduce their risk of getting infected, or if they do unfortunately have it, giving it to someone else.
Let me ask you if you have any techniques or ways to cope with the frustration, the overwhelming aspect of it, the burnout?
Sure. I mean, there's an increased level of stress and anxiety. And I'd certainly say that, you know, early on, as we started to hear reports about this, my own levels of stress or anxiety about, you know, going to work or being exposed to something at work were, to be honest, increased. And, you know, I've been working at Southern Maine Healthcare for 12 years, and that's the first time that happened. You know, the things that dissipate that, though, are acknowledging it and also just recognizing that, you know, there are aspects of this that we can change and there are aspects of this that we can't change. And the things that are in my control to change are how I respond to it. And recognizing that and then trying to model that is important. You know, this is in terms of COVID, it's affecting whether the patient has COVID symptoms or not. You know, concerns about COVID are impacting the delivery of healthcare, you know, for every single patient. You know, as providers, you know, one of the things that we have to think about or challenges that we face is, you know, we're all wearing masks now and eye protection. So one of the things that helped me reduce my level of stress and keep better was think about
shoot, Dr. Schmitz, you're starting to fade out on me.
Expressive with my eyes or how I use my hands to communicate.
Okay, great. And I can hear you clearly now. Great. And I understand, Dr. Schmitz, you can stay on the line with us for a little bit longer.
Sure, I'm happy to.
That's terrific. Wonderful. We're going to go to a caller, Joe, who's calling from the Stockholm area in northern Maine. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi there. My name is Joe. I was a EMT for Boston EMS for 15 years and a field training officer for them. And I think that you guys are hitting on a very, very poignant subject that there needs to be more awareness to of what kind of sort of what happens to the healthcare worker slash first responder post while they're working. The day-to-day stresses that they were under before COVID arrived were a great strain anyway, you know, and then you add COVID into the mixture. But where do we go from here? I'm so sorry, I'm getting a loss for words now. In a brain science way, what happens to the first responder is they get elevated, you know, like, oh, God, please excuse me. I can't really speak to this on a science level. I understand that the body goes through a dramatic response while going to a particular call. And that can be in an emergency room or in a controlled environment. And it can lead to just natural day-to-day stresses on the body. It is a very draining effect over time. You made a comparison earlier to combat trauma in relation to the first responders and frontline medical workers. I don't think the frontline medical workers have even like really caught up to this just yet because they're only 9 months in. But that career path has been involved in this kind of mix for a very long time, to a point where sort of post-traumatic stress disorder is pretty profound throughout all services, I believe.
Christine?
Yeah, Joe brings up a great point. Burnout and emotional distress have been very prevalent in healthcare workers for the last several decades and rising, unfortunately. And I think it's not too difficult. I mean, if you compare across systems of healthcare across different countries, you still see similar rates of burnout, which are 40% to 50% amongst physicians specifically, and our nursing colleagues and advanced practice providers have similar rates as well. So it doesn't seem to be the exact system of healthcare that's driving it as much as something intrinsic to providing care. And I think it's become so complex, if you think about all of the advances in medicine in the last century. And so there's been a pretty significant focus on this at a national and international level. The National Academy of Medicine has had many recommendations and really shined a light on this and recommended a lot of systemic programs and initiatives that could be considered for healthcare organizations to reduce their rates of burnout. And when the pandemic hit, that really pivoted to more of a focus on the individuals and to protect their physical and mental well-being. And so there's some great resources that have been shared nationally and internationally on things that can be done to try and mitigate the impact. Because as I said, this is going to go on for some time, not just the pandemic, but the actual consequences of it for everybody involved, not just healthcare workers, but that's what we're talking about today. And so there's recommendations out there to be followed.
And Jennifer, I would also appreciate that Joe had brought up this idea of that stress response and the brain. You know, there are parts of our brain that are designed to, in fact, give us that stress response, that fight, flight, or freeze response, and it's designed purposely to keep us safe. We actually need that to survive. What's challenging about this, as all of our panelists have talked about, is that this is just such a long experience of trauma. So the brain is getting tired. That fight, flight, or freeze response is starting to wear down the body. It really does go to that mind-body connection as well that our caller just brought up. You know, we can't separate those two things. When we're in that crisis mode, it's very exhausting mentally, but it's also very exhausting physically for folks.
Joe, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experience. We're going to go to Ed, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Ed. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm so glad that you're talking about this. Actually, I'm with Maine Frontline Warmline. This is an organization that DHHS and Maine Medical Association, MAPP, the psychiatric physicians, set up in April to help meet the needs of frontline workers across the state. And we've trained more than 100 volunteers, and we've been providing psychological first aid 7 days a week since April 22nd. We've got thousands of volunteer hours in, and have really helped to make a difference, both with individual frontline workers who are just feeling overwhelmed in this crisis, and also in doing consultation with particular organizations. So wanted to just sort of add that we're here and we're available for any individual who might be feeling overwhelmed. I think one of the things that's so important is to know that this is not a mental illness issue, that we're really talking about people who have skills, experience, success in their life in overwhelming disaster situations. And there are ways in which we can help individuals who feel overwhelmed to get their sense of balance, to get their feet back under them, and to help sustain them, because we're going to need these folks through this long crisis.
So, Ed, I'm so glad you called. I'm wondering, is there a number you'd like to give out?
I certainly would. If folks could call us anytime, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 7 days a week at 207-221-8196, or text FRONTLINE to 898-211, and we'll be happy to send a message to you, so that can be on your website as well.
Yeah, we will definitely put that on our website as well. And Ed, before I let you go, I want to ask since this warm line has been going since April, I'm wondering what you're hearing the most of. What seems to be the call that you're receiving, and what are you hearing from frontline workers?
Well, when people call us, they're frequently feeling some of the greatest distress of their lives. One of the things that we hear from healthcare workers, from educators and others, we hear a sense of incredible frustration that they're not able to do their job the way they feel they should be able to do it. And that's a term that's something that we've come to call moral injury. And that's frequently a part of things. Another thing that we're hearing is we're hearing people feeling overwhelmed, not knowing how to reduce distress. And one of the things that we can do is we can help people provide a safe space where they can both catalog some of the things they're dealing with, but also get to where they can remember some of the things that they do for self-care. Because we're hearing so often from people, they're so focused on the patient or on the student, on the folks that they're so focused on the mission that they have lost track of supporting themselves. And that appears to be a common denominator.
Ed, thank you so much for your call. Christine, is that you, I hear?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to thank Ed for calling. The Frontline Warm Line has been an incredible resource that we've shared when people have reached out, and we've tried to share it in some of our communications as well. He brought up an excellent point about moral injury, and it's one of the components of burnout. And the pandemic has absolutely exacerbated that, because people tend to suffer from moral injury when they feel like they have to do their job in a way that is not conducive or does not fit with how they've seen it and been able to perform in the past. So when you have threats to resources, when you start thinking about pandemic medicine and maybe having to allocate resources it's really distressing to healthcare providers to think about that. We've been very fortunate in the state of Maine that we haven't reached that point where we've had to allocate resources, but obviously with increasing cases on the rise now, you know, there's always a risk that the system could be overwhelmed.
This is Mike. May I add something?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I wanted to also thank Ed for what he just suggested, also in pointing out very clearly and emphatically that this is not any sort of illness, and that the term moral injury that he referenced and that Christine referenced is also very appropriate. You know, the thing to keep in mind, you know, if you encounter someone or a colleague who says something along those lines is, any of us can remind that person that they are having a normal response to an abnormal event, and then offer support and help. And you know, the changes that the first caller referenced over time in medicine is that, you know, these types of things, they affect all healthcare workers at a neurochemical level, regardless of the degree or title that you have. And I think it's important that we all recognize that we have to support each other as part of a team.
Angela?
Yeah, I appreciate what the caller had said and definitely want to emphasize that these situations are definitely not a mental illness, but it really is about a brain fatigue, a moral injury, a psychological injury, a spiritual injury. You know, this is all very stressful and exhausting for folks. And I do think when we sometimes hear that term burnout, sometimes that term can suggest to some that it can imply that the onus of the problem is somehow due to the professional sort of lack of endurance or strength, and that's not at all the case. These are really highly dedicated, competent professionals that are exhausted by these abnormal events. So that response that folks are having, that anxiety, maybe not being able to sleep, appetite changes, maybe irritability, that's all really normal responses to those abnormal events.
I know in May, when we were seeing kind of the peak of our first surge, I left a shift in the emergency department and I drove to Back Bay in Portland and just sat there and stared at the water for about 45 minutes without really thinking about what I was doing. And I've been practicing emergency medicine for 20 years. I've never done that. I'm kind of diligent about going straight home from work, and I have things I want to do and accomplish. And that was a real sign to me that I needed to kind of step back and think about where I was at because it was so atypical. It's that exhaustion that we sometimes just feel like we should be pushing through. And I appreciate what Angela and Mike are saying about it's not on the individual. It's not our fault. We're having a normal reaction, something that is a strenuous experience.
Yeah.
We
and
do
thanks
need to
for sharing that.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I we do need to go to a break, unfortunately. If you're in the audience and would like to share your story or join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood's Argentine red shrimp, caught in the wild and available raw, peeled, and ready to cook in the freezer at your local Hannaford. And Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks. Locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com.
I'm David Chow on the Leadership Gifts team at Maine Public, and on this day in Maine's history in 1963, President Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Clean Air Act, with Maine Senator Edmund Muskie standing closely nearby. In 1962, members of Congress had elected Muskie to serve as the first chair of the Subcommittee on Air and Water Pollution. In 1963, he wrote and developed the Clean Air Act of 1963 with his aide, Leon Billings. Muskie is considered the father of the 1960s environmental movement, which culminated in the passage of the Clean Air Act of 1970 and the Clean Water Act of 1972. Happy birthday, Maine!
On this day in Maine's history was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Dean Wealth Advisors, the Maine Seacoast Mission, and listeners like you.
I'm Lisa Mullins. Republicans are now pushing back on President Trump's claims the election was fraudulent. The author of a book about the discredited Senator Joe McCarthy says it all sounds familiar.
Back in Joe McCarthy's days, his fellow senators only stood up at the end when McCarthy's popularity had taken a deep dive.
Next time on Here and Now.
And Here and Now is coming up at noon here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling, and today we are discussing the toll that the pandemic is taking on healthcare workers and ways for them to cope. Our guests, Angela Felicia with Northern Light Health, Christine Hine with Maine Medical Center, and Dr. Michael Schmitz with Southern Maine Healthcare. Thank you all for being here. A couple different messages here that are related. An email from Robert. As a former hospital facilities manager, engineer, I offer the following. In addition to our dedicated nurses and doctors, let us also recognize and thank the folks in housekeeping, food service, etc., and the craftspeople that maintain and repair the buildings and utilities. These workers are also exposed and dedicated. The healthcare systems cannot operate without them. And from Julie, also an email, please give a shout out to the medical laboratory scientists who from the beginning have implemented new tests which involve instrumentation and training, making sure everything works okay. They have kept up with all the CDC and FDA directives, performing thousands of tests requiring fast turnaround time while still performing the usual test volume and often short-staffed. These folks work 24/7 with little acknowledgement, but they are always there. We'll go to Lorraine now, calling from Surrey. Hi, Lorraine. Go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. I attempted an email, so I'm sort of going to read it to you because I want to save your time. But I will say first that I have experiential empathy for those working at the bedside, nursing, doctors, and all the ancillary workers. My take on the subject is this. Hospital monopolies have been operating at the lowest possible staffing levels, possibly for years, to maintain a beneficial financial bottom line. The pandemic has now focused the public on the heroism of caregivers. And on programs such as yours, administrators speak compassionately to the media about how wonderful we all are. The true take on caregiving as a profession is that it is morally, I've forgotten the term, it affects people who give the care in ways that others do not understand. Bedside nursing, even on a normal day, can feel like a war zone. And I always would say, who takes care of the caregivers? Let's hope we don't resume the status quo regarding healthcare workers once COVID is passed. Thank you so much.
Christine.
Oh, I want to thank Lorraine. That's a wonderful statement. And I also want to tell her that I'm very dedicated to not resuming the status quo. We are working very hard to change the status quo, and I appreciate what she's saying.
Is part of the issue, and Christine and Mike, you can respond to this as well. We've done Maine Calling programs on the shortage of many kinds of healthcare workers, including nurses, and how many are retiring in this state. How do we improve the situation? It's probably a whole nother conversation, but I think an important one.
Yes, I agree. I wanted to thank Lorraine for her comments, and you know, speaking from my own experience, the way that we look at preparing for the COVID patient, you know, is that it takes all of us, including all of the people who called in from food services, who are cleaning the rooms, et cetera. It truly is a team approach, and you know, if you're going to compare it to baseball, you know, medicine is not being the batter at the plate, it's being the pitcher with everyone else in the field behind you, standing there to support you. And I know that we all support everyone is keeping the hospital up and running, because there are a lot of people that, that maybe we don't think about, but that we should.
I think that healthcare is really recognizing this, and so organizations that were out in front on wellness initiatives and programs maybe are more prepared for an experience like this, if you can be prepared for it. We've developed a wellness program at Maine Medical Center, and we've worked with other hospitals around the state and other organizations, and it's been very rewarding to try and improve the culture of medicine, and then this experience has demonstrated how vitally important that work is for our care teams.
Lorraine, go ahead, Angela.
I was going to jump in too, and I appreciate Lorraine's call as well. That, you know, I think one of the, what I hope will be a positive outcome of this pandemic is that sort of we as a healthcare system and then we as a society at large recognize the need for taking care of ourselves, taking care of each other, and really being compassionate. But with our patients, of course, but also with ourselves, right? Like so many times, people in healthcare from facilities, housekeeping, labs, pharmacy, et cetera, really tend to put patients above themselves, which is critically important at times, but we also need to remember to take care of ourselves so that we can be there for our patients and each other.
Lorraine, thank you so much for calling in. And as always happens, we have so many calls and we're so short on time. We'll go to Kristen calling from Old Town. Hi, Kristen. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. So I'm actually a new graduate nurse. I just started my job on the 10th of this month. So I'm still orienting, but I actually cared for 3 COVID patients for the first time last night. It was extremely scary, but, you know, I feel very excited after the shift is over. Hopefully I can speak succinctly right now. I'm still awake from a 12-hour shift last night, but I just wanted to say how proud I am to join the profession of nursing. And, you know, it is really a little bit emotional, but also just like I'm very proud to see the work that nurses are doing to care for patients. And, you know, they're making critical decisions when they see patients going south and are able to step in, and they're really saving these patients' lives, or I guess we. One of the callers was saying earlier about, this about burnout and it, you know, being seen as like a weakness. You know, it's definitely not a weakness. It just happens, you know, to see patients day in and day out. When we are very empathetic and just see them struggling in these different situations, like the 2 family members that were mentioned earlier, you know, it's like you can only handle so much, and at some point you do have that burnout. And I just want to say, you know, how much love I have for nurses all over the country and all over the world that are persisting through this pandemic and showing up to work in the face of, you know, staffing shortages to care for patients.
Kristen, thank you so much for your call. Congratulations to you. And it's so nice to hear your pride and excitement. And I just thank you so much for joining the nursing corps here in Maine. We just have time, I think, for one more call. I'm going to go to Amy calling from Bridgeton. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for letting me talk. I actually work with Christine in the emergency department at Maine Medical Center as an RN. Hi, Christine. I just wanted to also bring up, besides the moral injury that we are all experiencing, we are also subjected to terrible working conditions at this time. Just the PPE that we are wearing to keep us safe from this virus is very difficult for us to wear for full shifts, sometimes 12 hours at a time, day after day. And sometimes most of the time without even a break. We wear the PPE to keep us safe. However, it also turns around and causes symptoms. We end up with headaches, burning eyes, sore throats. It's very difficult. And then on top of that, we are also subjected to exposures that occur in the department and calls that we receive from employee health, telling us that we were exposed to somebody. So I just wanted to give a shout out to everybody that's working in these conditions. Also, staffing shortages are a huge burden upon us right now. If there's anything that any kind of hospital administration should be doing at this point, and that would be to incentivize staffing for call outs and quarantine and things like that. So it's been a difficult time. I will not lie. I've been a nurse for 30 years. I love the profession. I love the people I work with. Like the previous caller, I'm extremely proud to call myself a nurse and to be on the front line, but it has been difficult.
Amy, thank you so much for calling and adding your voice to the callers today. It's so important to hear from you. And we have just about a minute left. I'm going to give each of you a few seconds to say something that gives us some perspective of where we are today, healthcare workers are today. Angela.
Yeah, I so much appreciate that you've taken the time to do this topic. It's critically important. And one of the things I think we haven't yet mentioned, perhaps, is just even that word resilience. It's just how resilient our healthcare workers are across that continuum of care, and how I think we will continue to see that resilience in our healthcare workers because they are so dedicated.
Sure.
And reminding them all to take care of themselves.
Dr. Schmitz.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. One of the things that, in spite of all the challenges, one of the things that I personally appreciate and keep hearing from the community is just the responsiveness of thank you, or saying thank you, or thank you for being here. That really, really means a lot. And that's the type of thing that you can just, hold on to when you're facing challenges at the end of a shift that help keep you going. So
great. And Dr. Hine, if you have 5 or 10 seconds.
Yes, thank you very much. I just wanted to say that I have immense gratitude. I'm in awe every single day when I walk through either in our isolation unit or I walk by and I look in the windows and I see what my colleagues are doing for their community. So I'm very thankful for my colleagues and my family and friends.
That's Dr. Christine Hine, emergency medicine physician and chief wellness officer for Maine Medical Center. Angela Felicia, licensed social worker at Northern Light Health. And Dr. Michael Schmitz at Southern Maine Healthcare. Today's sound engineer was Lucy Suchek. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.